The action I took, while technically illegal, was necessary to avoid a greater harm.
Hey everybody, it's Matt from Solidarity House Cooperative. In Duluth, Minnesota, on January 12th of this year, in the midst of a protest against Wells Fargo, three activists locked themselves to the entrances to the bank. Scott Bull, Michael Niemi, and Ernesto Burbank blocked the entrance to protest the bank's investment in Enbridge Energy Partners, a high-level extractor, polluter, and culture killer. Wells Fargo and Enbridge are propping up tar sands pipelines, which carry profound hazards jeopardizing indigenous rights, climate stability, and unpredictable oil markets, according to Ruth Breach. Enbridge is pushing a 1,000-mile pipeline through Minnesota. These deals are often shady and opaque to the public, and there's little that local communities can do to stop those deals from taking place. So because of that, Bull, Niemi, and Burbank felt they didn't have a choice. They had to stand up and do something. And that has become the basis of their defense, a necessity defense, in Duluth court. Their attorneys, J.T. Haynes and Jennifer McEwen, raised the necessity defense. I recently talked to J.T. Haynes. He told me a decision is expected by Christmas, and he had a lot to say about the legal defense itself and the stakes involved in the struggle for climate justice.
The judge's ruling is not the most important thing that's happening here. So there's only a few things he could do here, and all of which are meaningful still. So we have submitted post-trial briefs, which was in lieu of closing arguments, and we are awaiting the decision from referee Schulte. And he has stated on the record that he expects his ruling to come down sometime before mid-December. Yeah, and actually notably, although not surprisingly, it's now petty misdemeanor trespassing. It started as misdemeanor trespassing obstruction and disorderly, and then the prosecutor, I think, smartly dropped the disorderly and obstruction, because I don't think the state could prove those charges in this case, that there was no disorderly conduct. We weren't challenging the facts on the trespass, so that's the charge that remained, and before trial, she dropped it to a petty. And what that basically means is there's no possibility for jail time. And the result of that for the defendants is they no longer have a constitutional right to a jury trial once it's dropped from a misdemeanor to a petty. If there's no jail time at issue, they don't have a constitutional right to a jury. So that's the reason this was a bench trial. Well, the basic way these types of cases work, the necessity defense in the climate context, is you don't challenge the underlying facts. The defendants basically stipulated to the action that they took. There was no effort made to hide the action or deny the action. In fact, I'd say the opposite. There was a very careful effort made to take a responsible, calculated action that would have a limited and important impact, but one that was like proportional to the point they were trying to make. So, for example, nobody's life was in danger here. The exit to the branch, like the emergency exit to the branch, was still open. This is a very peaceful action on the part of these defendants. The action they took, while technically illegal, was necessary to avoid a greater harm. So there are four elements to proving that the action you took was necessary. The threshold element is called the balancing of harms, and that's basically what I just described. The harm committed is outweighed by the harm they were seeking to avoid. That's typically an easier element to meet, especially in the climate context, because the harm they're seeking to avoid is obviously very large. The other elements are imminence. The harm has to be imminent. There has to be a causal connection between their action and avoiding the harm, and they have to not have any legal alternatives to the action that they took. It's statutory in Illinois. It's not in Minnesota. It's common law in Minnesota. We were citing case law from various jurisdictions, including Minnesota. There are very few cases, obviously, here. Well, basically none, using this defense in the climate context. There's a couple that are kind of percolating in 2018. So we looked at cases in Massachusetts and Texas and Illinois and elsewhere, and some guidance from the U.S. Supreme Court on the necessity defense in general. The idea of the balancing of harms, that's reflected in the model penal code, and the Supreme Court has discussed the prong of there being no legal alternatives. And this case might come down to, certainly one of the big issues the judge is going to have to look at with the briefs, is what does it mean for there to be no legal alternatives? And our suggestion is the defense is basically meaningless if what that means is these three people have to have engaged in all possible actions, and all of those actions have to have failed, and then they resorted to this action.
That would be impossible.
That's first of all logically and factually impossible. What we have argued to the judge is there should be inferred a reasonability reading of the no legal alternatives, meaning there must be no reasonable legal alternative, and we think there's some basis in how the Supreme Court has discussed this element and has assumed an aspect of reasonability to the element. It is somewhat de novo, but what we tried to do for the judge is help him understand that this is, first of all, a developing area of law, but also, second, that he's not alone in looking at this. A Boston municipal judge found, in pretty similar circumstances, found some pipeline protesters, quote, not responsible. That's what it's called in Massachusetts for a civil infraction, code infraction. So that has happened. So we certainly made him aware of that in our brief, if he wasn't already. And then we had the recent Valve Turner's trial in Bagley, Minnesota, Clearwater County.
Right, and, right.
And that's a district court, and that judge did allow in the necessity defense. That case was dismissed for other reasons, but we discussed it at least for the proposition that he's not completely out on a limb here in terms of
right.
looking at this. I have deep affection for and concern for my own community, and my own observation leads me to the belief that a variety of tactics is necessary. So I respect all people who are doing their best to take action, whatever action they determine is reasonable and necessary in their circumstances. So, as legal counsel in this case, I've looked at it less as a situation where I need to determine for myself whether I think what they did is right. I have
right.
personal feelings about that, although that's not really what I don't think it's important that I even speak to that. I think what's important here is people have taken action, and it's clearly, there's a lot of people obviously concerned about climate change, and they're struggling about what action they should take. And I think the major value of what has happened here is it's worth everyone thinking about what these people did and why they did it. And people can come to their own conclusions about what they can do in their own lives, of course. But that's the major value of the action that was taken here. Well, there's certainly a history in this country of courts responding to failures elsewhere in the democratic process, including the legislative process. So we see that this is an opportunity for courts to respond similarly here in an unprecedented climate change context. Now, it's not really guaranteed what the result of that will be. So this by no means is to suggest that other means of addressing climate change are any more or less important. They all need to continue. But I think what we'll see here, especially I think probably nationwide, certainly in Minnesota, is there will need to be more clarity in the law about how to handle cases like this. There are some questions and some holes in the case law, specifically about how this defense applies in the climate context. Whether that lands in statute, I don't know. Certainly some judges are going to have to make some rulings about it. I hope that courts take a broader view of where we're at in society and use that understanding to guide how they interpret the defense. That's my hope for the judges.
You've talked about that in the context of the history, too, of courts. It's not courts making law, in the very sort of vulgar, kind of iteration of that critique. But it's definitely this sort of the courts, are historical. They have a place in material history, and they don't stand above it,
That's right. They are empowered to have an impact here. Absolutely. And I hope they take that responsibility seriously and there's narrow readings of this defense, which could produce one result, but they could opt to take a broader view of the defense as well, which I think would be a responsible thing to do.
I will say that people in the people in the climate community who are not also members of the legal community see a lot of hope in these types of cases, and they are cases that excite the public consciousness. I think on folks that are particularly concerned about climate issues.
I'm hopeful too. One thing I'd like to just mention about this case, and it'll obviously vary from case to case depending on who is involved and how what type of good faith they are using in pursuing their own duties In this case, the prosecutor is a member of our community in Duluth. The judge is, the referee is a member of our community. The police officers are members of our community. And obviously, like, the policing as an institution is a very complex and fraught institution in this country. And I think that's putting it mildly. But in this particular case, the chief of police in Duluth, his name's Mike Tuscan, he knows Scott Bull, one of the defendants. And in my observation, he's taken some effort to understand what Scott's done. And when he asked Scott if he could convince him to unlock himself from the Wells Fargo gate, and Scott told him why he couldn't do that, and the chief said, well, then it's an honor to arrest you. What we've done here is we've made a very deliberate decision with our clients to put the focus where it belongs, which is Wells Fargo and their investment practices and energy transfer partners and Enbridge and these dirty tar sands. And not so much in this particular courtroom. And we're not trying to make an enemy of the judge or the prosecutor or even the police. That is not the audience. So what we sought to do was to prove our case in as basically as mutual and cooperative a fashion with the state as we could.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we need to represent our clients fully and zealously, but we also were looking for opportunities to present this as, this is not an us versus you thing. This is much bigger than that. So, you know, to the extent we can accomplish our goals here and still not make your life miserable, like, we're very interested in that. So a lot of the prosecutor's line of questioning focused on, you know, what else would you do? Where's the line? Would you, you know, what other legal or illegal actions would you consider taking or take in the face of Wells Fargo's fossil fuel investments? And I think all the witnesses did a responsible job of acknowledging that that's a fact-based, circumstance-based thing that they can't answer in the hypothetical. But one of the things Mr. Bull said, which I thought was really powerful, is he said he described his knowledge as being, his wisdom as being like Swiss cheese, and that he needs the input and involvement of his sisters and brothers in his community to figure out what he himself should be doing. Which I thought was just such a powerful way to make the point that, like, look, nobody has all the answers. Certainly not these three folks who are members of the community like all of us are. I think one of the lessons from this experience, and it's been learned elsewhere too, and kind of learned better elsewhere, I'd say, is, you know, these types of actions require a community of support and a real understanding throughout the process of the different roles that need to be played. And we've had some really good roles played here with what the defendants did with their action. I think the legal team has acted honorably and well. But what has been missing in my estimation is communication support, fundraising and organizing support. It really should not fall to the people putting themselves on the line to be organizing travel and lodging and expenses, court transcript expenses, things like press releases and organizing press conferences and opportunities to engage the media. So, you know, some of our friends who've done some of this work out east with the Climate Defense Project, they're a little further along in developing those kind of core support functions.
Thank you again for everything, and my best to the defendants and your colleagues. Much love and solidarity.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you for your work, and a greeting from Duluth to the good folks in Laramie.
Thanks a lot.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
We're Solidarity House on Patreon and Solidarity House Cooperative on Facebook and Twitter.